On this episode of the Nittany Dispatch, we discuss Manny Diaz's departure for Duke, who could potentially replace him, and who may or may not be playing in the bowl game this week on the Nittany Dispatch. Hello and welcome into the Nittany Dispatch. I am John Sauber of the Center Daily Times. She is Audrey Snyder of The Athletic. And Audrey, things just keep happening. It just really never ends. It's kind of impressive.
December, man, what a ride. Of course, as soon as we started recording today, someone announced their plans to turn pro. We'll get to that later. It's Friday now, Thursday night, Manny Diaz. You know, John, this was like the all day long Thursday.
Yes.
Right? He was their top target.
And Wednesday.
Wednesday there was some stuff trickling out. Thursday, he's the top target. And then it didn't happen officially until around 8:30, 9 o'clock Thursday night. Manny Diaz off to Duke to become the Blue Devils head coach. Not one of the jobs that I would have initially projected, right? I think if we were having this conversation like maybe a month ago and we said, well, I always went with the caveat of, hey, we don't know where, you know, what jobs are going to come open, that type of thing. Interesting destination. I think we'll definitely get into that today, John. I'm just going to keep looking around, scrolling, making sure no one does anything while we're recording.
I was going to say, when I'm constantly looking to my second screen on the right, it's not because I'm not listening. It's because I'm terrified someone is entering the portal or someone is declaring for the draft and we're not going to know about it. So that will be that. And despite, you know, my focus on this, Jonathan Taylor not playing this Sunday for the Colts does not meet that criteria. So I don't have to, fortunately, that scrolling look
good
did not impact us at all. Yeah, we're making progress here. But no, Manny Diaz going to Duke is, it's really interesting, right? Like it's obviously his second head, well, I guess is it his third head coaching opportunity?
Second and a quarter?
Two and a half.
I guess at this point, right, he's been there for about 15 hours. So it's almost as long as his Temple tenure.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, we all know that he was technically the Temple head coach for a little, right? Like,
kind of
it didn't
maybe,
last long before Miami came calling and got him back, and then unceremoniously, and I think it's safe to say unfairly, let him go in a really kind of ridiculous manner.
Public.
And it paid off with, not kneeling the ball against Georgia Tech to lose this year. So really, really going well down there in Coral Gables. But this is, I think, what Manny was looking for at the end of the day, right? A head coaching job is what I mean by that. Like, I don't think he was necessarily looking for, you know, it's got to be this level of playoff contender or this, you know what I mean? Has to meet this threshold of, I want to succeed in this way. I think it was, he wanted to be a head coach again. And Duke offered him an opportunity to do that at the Power Five level, and he took it.
Yeah, John, don't make me go into this rant because you know what's going to happen. A lot of people, the pay Manny Diaz crowd, the come on, just unload the Brinks truck. I've said my piece on that, but I will say it again. But before I do that, don't forget to rate, review, subscribe here at the Nittany Dispatch, wherever you get your podcasts. We are here kind of as all the news unfolds and develops. Been here for most of the season. We'll be here all off season through the Peach Bowl, all of that good stuff. 5-star reviews are preferred, as always. But John, the thing to me, right, the whole pay Manny Diaz the money crowd, this was never about that. And I wrote about that on my piece Thursday night on The Athletic. Manny Diaz, thanks to that Miami buyout, made $3.6 million this season at Penn State as the defensive coordinator. Now, that's not just a lot of money because we're sports writers, right? And we don't get huge salaries in general, right? That's just like not a lot of money, you know, because it's like, oh, this and that. Like, this is a ton of money for a coordinator, right? You look at what Penn State is willing to pay for an offensive coordinator. They put a really highly competitive salary package out there for the guy that I will keep calling Coach K because it seems like it's sticking. And I've talked to some of his former players this week and they call him Coach K. John absolutely hates that.
Andy Kotelnicki.
And now that we have the Manny Diaz Duke connection, I really got to watch what I'm saying with Coach K here. But to me, it's like you look at that salary, right? Was it starting 1.6 million, John, if I'm recalling correctly?
Yeah. 1.6, 1.7, 1.8, and then 2 in the final year.
And gosh, that was only a week ago that we were diving into that fun.
I know. It feels like it was like 3 years ago, and I don't know that I've slept since then.
Oh, I have. I keep normal business hours.
Let me rephrase that. I don't know that I've slept well since then.
Well, that's a you problem, John. I'm a sound sleeper. But when you go back to the pay and the salary and all those types of things, $3.6 million for Manny Diaz this past season. He was set to make $3.7 million this year. Again, that Miami buyout was significant, right? So that's where that figure comes from. Now, that's not head coach salary money. And because Duke is a private school, right? Like, I haven't seen any contract terms. I don't expect that we will. But I think for some of the fans maybe trying to understand this move or make sense of it or say, because one of the things I've seen a lot of is, was this the best job Manny Diaz could get? This hiring cycle, it might have been, right? I think you look at it and you say, it's tough for a defensive coordinator to get a Power 5 head coaching job. And then I think you look at it and you say, all right, well, Syracuse was already filled with Fran Brown. Mississippi State, that to me was the one that would have probably been like best case scenario for Manny Diaz. He had interest in that job. Mississippi State didn't go that route, right? So I think it makes sense. To me, this is also like a stepping stone to another job. I think that's what Mike Elko showed, right? Is that if you do well at Duke, a place where the expectations are drastically different, where the resources, of course, are going to be drastically different, you can then use that as a launching pad to a bigger job. And so that's kind of where I stand on it. I mean, we've said it on here. It seems like every podcast, whenever we talk about the Penn State defense, we'd say Manny Diaz did a hell of a job. And it's true. Was very forward about wanting to be a head coach since the day he got here. So now he gets that opportunity. I'm really excited to see kind of how it shakes out for him. We saw some player tweets yesterday. Kind of the, I think the initial shock and surprise was kind of weighing over them, probably, understandably so. But yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, we got a James Franklin statement, John, this morning.
Yes.
Thanking Manny Diaz. You only get those when guys get promoted around here, right? That's always the deal.
Yeah, that seems to be the case. But I'm generally in alignment with you on what this job is for Manny and it being a stepping stone. I will say, like, it's not an easy place to succeed. Right. Mm-hmm. We've seen that these, because Duke's a basketball school at the end of the day, right?
Coach K, so, right? Let's throw it back.
Yeah. No, absolutely not. Andy Kotelnicki, that is the man's name. That is what I will be calling him. But no, I do think like there are going to be a lot of challenges there in that regard and making, mm-hmm. I don't think he's going to try to make Duke the focal point. I think he's going to try and have as much success as he possibly can. But also, like you said, I think for his career, that doesn't have to be 10 win seasons. 8-4 a few times, I think, or a couple times, I think could get him to a place where he's then getting the next job. I do think there is reason for concern if this one doesn't work out. Like, is he ever a Power 5 head coach again? I don't know, right? Like, it's possible that this is his last go at being a Power 5 head coach, or it might be the end of the Power 5 as well. We might be talking about the Power 2 anyways. Yeah.
Well, and I think that's the other part of this, John, right? It's kind of the haves and the have nots in some ways of what college football is set up to become. And it sucks. I hate that. I'm not necessarily looking forward to it. But I think the point you make there is a good one. Like, of course it's a risk to take this job if you're Manny Diaz, no doubt about it. But if you succeed at Duke, as we just saw, you're going to have some opportunities.
Yeah, no doubt. But I do think the question is, what do those opportunities look like, mm-hmm. right? Is he getting, I don't know, Florida State or Florida or like a Power 5 school that is a traditional power that can make the playoff? Or is it closer to like just a Big Ten school that is trying to compete on that level because they have more money than the ACC, right? Like, is it like a Wisconsin? And again, Indiana. I'm not intimating that any of these. Yeah, Indiana is a good one.
Leave the Badgers out of this.
I'm not saying any of these schools' jobs are going to be open, but I do think like this is a type of school that I think he would be looking at the next step. Or like, frankly, I think Illinois is probably a better job than Duke, right? And mm-hmm. Rutgers and Maryland are better jobs than Duke, not because of anything other than they're in the Big Ten and they get Big Ten money. And that's really important now. And so I wonder if, you know, I don't think it's the right or wrong decision. I think Manny Diaz made the best decision for him and his family, and that's generally always the right decision, right? Like, you have to make those calls. That's not for us to make. But I do think, like, there maybe next cycle there could have been some of those. We saw Indiana come open this year. There could be another Big Ten level job that he could have maybe had a chance at that might have been better off. There's also a chance that that wasn't going to be the case, and none of those jobs came open, and then he's left after year three taking a worse job than Duke. So I think that what this does is it mitigates his risk. He knows he's going to be coaching in the power, being a head coach at a Power Five school next year with a chance to succeed and launch himself into the next gig. And I think that's pretty clear. That's what he wanted to do, is be a head coach again. And this gets that done. And at the end of the day, no amount of money is going to change that James Franklin can't let him be co-head coach, right? I mean, he can't. He's never going to. Like, no one's ever going to.
Yeah, can't. No one's ever going to do that. Yeah, gosh. Can you imagine, John? Can you imagine that?
And I don't plan on imagining it after this conversation. But this is... This gets the job done for what Manny Diaz wanted, and I think it's the right call for him at the end of the day, if he thinks it's the right call. So this doesn't mean the end of things for Penn State, though. They now have to replace him, which is going to be the topic of conversation until that happens.
1 week after the offensive coordinator hire is finalized, here we go on the defensive coordinator search. I will say one. Final thought on kind of Manny Diaz. People would say, I've heard this one a lot too, well, he should have just stayed another year because then he would have had a better opportunity. No guarantees ever, right? One, what other jobs would potentially open? Can't project that. Two, statistically, it's going to be difficult to envision this Penn State, again, statistically being better than it was this year. Like, again, a lights out defense. I think they're going to be really good next year. They should be really good next year. Strong personnel, assuming nothing crazy happens, right? You've got a lot to work with here. But again, this was probably in terms of like Manny Diaz, his ceiling as a defensive coordinator. I don't really know how you won up this year, right? So that was kind of my last parting thought, because I did see the tweet, John, before we went live, of Diaz stepping off the plane at Duke. Looked happy. So we here at the Nittany Dispatch wish him well. Curious.
Yeah, Manny was always great to us.
Interesting guy. Glad we got to talk to him when we did. Always, my thing is always wish we could talk to him more. That's my thought process with most assistant coaches and coordinators, is I'd like to talk with them more, but that's a me thing, I guess.
That's a whole other podcast where we rant for 2 hours. That's what that is.
I will not be available that day for that show. But in terms of potential candidates, you hit on the one earlier, John. I think Tom Allen is one that's intriguing for sure. Not just because this time of year, there's a high likelihood I could potentially call him Tim Allen as I watch the Santa Claus for like the fifth time, probably this season.
Oh.
Great movie. Fantastic. Like that was one of my childhood all time, like, wore the crap out of that VHS. I watched it so many times.
Fair enough. I'm not going to ruin someone's childhood movie here. I will stop booing.
Yeah. See, there we go. It's the season for me rewatching childhood classics. But I do think Tom Allen makes some sense for sure. I mean, I was kind of combing through old quote sheets last night about what James Franklin has said every time they've played Indiana. Again, he wants a head coach of the defense, like he wants a head coach of the offense, like he wants a head coach of the special teams. I could see that, but John, are we overlooking potentially the kind of obvious solution, maybe obvious solution of Anthony Poindexter? I know we've talked about it on here before, but a lot has changed since then, now that there's officially an opening.
Yeah, so I was, and I think you did this too, in your story about Manny Diaz leaving, we both had put some names out there on our respective websites, mm-hmm. You over at The Athletic, me at centerdaily.com. Dex was mentioned for both of us, right? He is a college football legend. He is a Hall of Famer. He is respected by everyone you talk to, everyone I've talked to, at least, about him. He has been a defensive coordinator before. People seem to miss this, that he was the defensive UConn coordinator Huskies. At Connecticut. Yeah, and people, I think that tenure gets mischaracterized a little bit because it ended so badly. That 2016 season was horrendous. The defense was horrendous. But the 2 years before that, it's not like they were as bad as their talent I guess the best way to put it, UConn just perpetually less talented than everyone else. That was true in 2014 to 2016 too. But they finished in 2014, I have this in the story, 65th in SP Plus in 2014 and 43rd in SP Plus in 2015. It's not going to blow your socks off. It's not like this, wow, he had UConn having a top 10 defense. But he had both of those defenses playing at 1 year in an FBS average level and one in the next year in above average level. And I think there's something to be said for that, right? I'm not saying this makes him an easy candidate. You hire Anthony Poindexter no matter what right away. But I do think it essentially, if I were making this hire, I wouldn't be worried about what he did at UConn, right? Like, I wouldn't let that be something that, you know, stops me from making him the hire. And he does have play calling experience because of that. And I think that is something that James Franklin's gonna want in this next hire. I would assume he would anyways, given how big this next year is. And we've talked about this before. I just don't know if the timing lines up. They're probably going to make the playoff next year. They need to make the playoff next year when it expands to 12.
Expanded field, yeah.
And I don't know that a defensive coordinator who hasn't called plays in 7 years, who this would be his first time as a defensive coordinator at Power 5 level, I don't know if that's the right hire. But then I go and compare resumes with other guys, and even Tom Allen. Like, Tom Allen was the defensive play caller for a year at USF and a year at Indiana before he became the interim head coach. And then he's called plays intermittently at Indiana. That's a whole other conversation. Took over play calling and then gave it away again and then took it over again. But he has called plays extensively, but he doesn't even have this like massive track record as specifically a defensive coordinator. You look at some other guys like Joe Rossi from Minnesota doesn't have like this massive success.
He was one of my names, John. Are you trying to steal my names?
Listen, he was one of my names too. I think he's one of everyone's names.
He's a Pittsburgh native. He makes too much sense. Tried to steal his name. Yeah, I know this.
Absolutely not. I do have a name that I know you don't have that we'll get to here in a bit. But he didn't have a good tenure at Rutgers, right? Like, they were horrendous. And I think it was 2012 and 13. 2013 and 14, when he was the defensive coordinator there, they were terrible. Now that's a decade ago. Like, how much do you value that? I feel really bad. Rutgers defensive coordinator's last name, I've been staring
Harris-Simiak.
At it. Harris-Simiak. I've been staring at it for 36 hours. I couldn't find a pronunciation online when I looked. But Harris-Simiak was successful as Maine's head coach when he was there. I think he took them to the FCS semifinals in 2018. Mm-hmm. Before becoming a position coach at Minnesota and then having success. But like, even you look at this year, I think they finished 38th in SP Plus this season. And it was Rossi who finished 38th in SP Plus this season. And then Harris-Simiak was 22nd this season. And that's still like not elite. It's good. It's not elite, right? And he doesn't have an extensive history of calling plays. His essentially is the same as at the FBS level as Poindexter's. And I say this because I think a thing a lot of people have been saying why Poindexter can't or shouldn't be the hire is because he's not experienced. It's like, to me, the other candidates I look at, it's like, well, they're not exactly experienced when it comes to being specifically a defensive coordinator either. And we'll get to my other name, my fifth name.
Oh, that wasn't your name. That wasn't your name that I didn't have. Oh, okay.
Oh, you didn't have Harris-Simiak?
Okay. I did not. Yeah. Although I did. Okay. Well, I interviewed him. Two summers ago when I did the Rutgers State of the Program story. Yeah, we had a good chat. Now, I will say the timing for me on this one, interesting in that Danton Lynn and Elijah Robinson off the board, right? Both of those presumably are guys that James Franklin would have been intrigued by. Now, we don't know to what level, especially with Lynn because he's younger.
I actually think it's the other way around.
The Penn State, you think he would have been intrigued by James, don't you think?
No, I think Lynn would have been more intriguing by James, but Robinson, because he hasn't called plays at all, would have been a much tougher sell to be the hire. I think Lynn, because he had success as a play caller, would have been more intriguing.
Would have been. Yeah, no, I mean, I think both of those two guys, like, again, you look at unique criteria, and I know a lot of people love to get hung up on the Penn State ties, and they think that's the only thing, and I've had some people advocating to bring Tom Bradley back. That's not happening. I've had some other people make some, you know, Penn State associated connections here. There's a massive candidate pool out there, but the candidate pool is slightly smaller right now because of kind of where we're at with this hiring cycle.
Let's take a brief break from the podcast. Talk about the good people at Voodoo Brewing Company at State College, located at 201 Elmwood Street. Voodoo is a lovely place to get beers, and it is a lovely place, frankly, even if you don't want to have a drink, just to hang out. You know, they have good food in the Voodoo Kitchen. They also have alcoholic slushies, which I will endorse every day of the week. You can sit outside now that it gets a little colder out, and you sit by the fire pits. You know, you can play trivia Tuesday nights. They've got bingo Thursday nights. It is just a fun, fun atmosphere.
And you can get beers to go for your holiday parties, John. It's that time of year, swing in, get some beers, or gather at Voodoo with your friends. Always a good option, always a fun time. And got to get back over there, John, now that our schedules are clearing up a little bit.
Yeah, you and I will be become frequenters once again now that the season is coming to a close. That is at Voodoo Brewing Company in State College, located at 201 Elmwood Street. Now back to the show.
I am assuming, excuse me, as we sit here on December 8th, that Penn State heads to the Peach Bowl with three interim coordinators, right? Jawan Sider and Ty Howell, the co-offensive interim coordinators. And I would assume that Anthony Poindexter, since he already was the co-defensive coordinator, that he would be the interim coordinator, at least for the bowl game. That has not been announced yet, but that's kind of would be my assumption, right? I think that obviously makes the most sense. Now, could we, or do you see, John, because we could see anything, do you foresee a potential situation where kind of goes the route of the Deion Barnes hire last year, right? Where it seems like you have a guy that you're really intrigued by. In this case, it could be Anthony Poindexter that James knows really well, is intrigued by, that players like, that we see James go out there and interview some other candidates and maybe make an announcement after the bowl game instead of before. Could we, do you maybe potentially foresee that?
I think if this is not filled by the time they leave, then that's probably where it's going to go. That would make a lot of sense. My assumptions for the two timelines that would lead to Poindexter being the hire would be either in the next like 72 hours, right? Like it's announced.
Not leaving the house. Monday.
I know. Right. That it would be quick because it's like, okay, James knew this was coming for a couple of days because we all did. And like, he was able to put this together and wants to promote Poindexter and make him the defensive coordinator. Or it goes, like you said, the Deion Barnes route where there are interviews. He decides that Poindexter is the best candidate. They announce it later, right? Like, and because he's already in the building, they don't have to make changes. Although in that case, you probably want to hire a linebackers coach. And that's where we can get into, well, Rob Smith is there as an analyst. Like, do you promote him to be the linebackers coach? That would make a lot of sense.
Was that the other name you're teasing that I didn't have? Rob Smith?
No, that we can get into that now. I don't think it was a stash move,
right?
No, like, and frankly, Poindexter is more qualified than he is, right? Mm-hmm. I think it would be, not to judge a hire before we see it, but if they were to promote Rob Smith over Anthony Poindexter, I think it would be a bad decision. I think you have someone on staff who's a full-time staffer who is really good at this and has shown that he can have some level of success with a lack of talent when he was at UConn. I think it would be a mistake, frankly, to promote Rob Smith over him. That being said, I do think if they end up hiring someone who's not a linebackers coach, then Rob Smith would make sense as a linebackers coach. The candidate that I have that I don't think I've seen anywhere is Brad White from Kentucky. He has been there, I believe, for 6 years now. Okay. Going to have to look at my story to verify that. He became the defensive coordinator in 2019 after a year as the outside linebackers coach, and he was with the Colts for six seasons in the NFL. If you remember, Matt House left for, I think it was an NFL job at the time. He's now the defensive coordinator at LSU, but he left for an NFL job, and that's when Brad White got promoted. They run, if I remember correctly, I didn't watch a lot of Kentucky this year, but I have recently. They run more of a 3-4, which can be a bit of an impediment, but these guys tend to be pretty flexible. I also like, he's had a lot of success. I know Mike Stoops has a defensive background, so people might wonder what his involvement is. My understanding is that this is Brad White's defense, right? And that he has been the one calling it and making those decisions. And so he's from Massachusetts. So are you
advocating for a 3-4, John?
No, I'm advocating for the best hire. And if it's Brad White, then you change your defense.
No, I don't think you do, because I think where they're at, right? Like, this works. We've seen that they've got the personnel for a defense like this. Well,
I don't know that next year's personnel is.
But you got to think long term.
Yes, for sure. But I don't know that next year's personnel or the long term personnel is necessarily pigeonholed into anything, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think they're going to look at candidates probably that run things like the 3-3-5. And frankly, like, I've seen Jim Leonard connected a lot. Jim Leonard runs a 3-4.
That was why I did not include him on my list because
see, of and I just and I that, think White's a better candidate.
See, and that to me is where I think over time, right, we've seen here, and James Franklin likes to say this too, they've played really good defense here. What Manny Diaz mm-hmm. did just elevated that, which was so true. And that to me is where I don't see them doing anything drastically different. And I would say a 3-4 is drastically different. Now you can make the argument. I think this is what you're making of like different athletes, right? The way kind of the edge rusher is right now, the skills.
And you want to talk about maximizing Abdul Carter. I think it's putting him on the outside in a 3-4. And you have the athletes, you mentioned the athletes, they have guys that frankly, like Denai can play there. He can also play, as an actual defensive end in a 3-4 and be a penetrating mm-hmm. guy from that standpoint too, because he's so big and strong, although you probably want him on the outside. But I think you can manipulate the scheme to essentially allow Abdul Carter to be maximized in a way that I don't know if he currently is. That's another
topic. I think this is going to lead us to what we broached before, the Micah Parsons discussion that we had.
Right, which I've said before. Like, you see how much success Micah Parsons is having in the NFL right now. It's hard not to look at that as a mistake by the Penn State staff to not get anywhere near that production as a pass rusher in college, given how incredible he was right away for the Cowboys. And to me, Abdul Carter can be that level of pass rusher. Now he has to refine his technique more. He can't just be like running like his hair's on fire to rush the passer. Rushing from the edge is different than being a blitzer in the A gaps. But I do think that he is the kind of athlete that would benefit from being in a 3-4. I'm not even necessarily advocating for a change to a 3-4. What I am saying is, if you think Brad White or Jim Leonard is the best candidate, I would not rule something like that out just because they run a 3-4. I think you can use the personnel you have. Getting a nose tackle would be a little more difficult, but frankly, so few teams run a 3-4 now that I think it might be easier to find a guy like that in the portal that can be a space eater. PJ Mustipher would have been great for that when he was at Penn State. Like, they've had guys in the past.
Not fat enough conversation up front again. Let's not revisit that. The storyline, bizarre storyline of last season.
But yeah, no, I think the personnel can, like, you can fit it to it. I don't think you have to look at essentially, okay, we're only running 4-3 here. I think you can look at a 3-4. I think you can look at a 3-3-5. And basically find a guy that's going to maximize the personnel based on what they do best. And I don't think that has to be one specific scheme.
Speaking of personnel, John, there's someone that we know for sure has played his last game in a Penn State uniform. Chop Robinson announced this week that he will forego the Peach Bowl and declare for the NFL draft. So this is it for Chop Robinson. Probably going to be out of here soon enough if he isn't already starting the train elsewhere.
I'd heard some rumblings about this post Michigan State that this could be the case. I'm not overly surprised. Mm-hmm. I'm going to call it now. Chop's going to be a first round pick. He is that explosive of a first step. And I don't think I would fault anyone for making the decision to preserve their future over a bowl game that is, while meaningful to fans and can really help the program springboard in the future, doesn't impact his career or legacy or anything like that one way or another.
Yeah, I totally understand the opting out portion of the season, which is what we've arrived at. Like, I get it. You know, these guys have to do what's in their best interest, right? You're playing a violent sport. Yes, injuries can happen anytime, as Robinson found out, especially in that Ohio State game, right? Like, scary moment there for sure. So that's it on the Chop Robinson story, right? One of the biggest hits, we'll see you again when we have a bigger sample size, but early biggest hits of the transfer portal for Penn State, maximized his time here. Now, the other side of that is we've already seen Penn State play a decent amount of football without Chop Robinson in terms of the Peach Bowl. You've got Denai Dennis Sutton. Adisa Isaac, we haven't, as my phone buzzes, I hope I checked.
Don't worry, I checked. We're looking.
Seems like we're still in play for Adisa Isaac, but right now nothing's happened yet. So you have him. You've got Amin Vanover. You have Jameel Lyons, who's certainly going to be a big piece for 2024. You have Zariah Fisher. Like, you're going to kind of dig into that rotation, I would think, a little bit more. Huge, huge win for Lane Kiffin, and that he does not have to worry about Chop Robinson, as he tweeted, which I thought was hilarious. Did you also catch last night?
He was tweeting
Manny Diaz rumors. Yeah.
Congratulating him for getting the head coaching job. Listen, like I said, I think I said this on the pod, like this head coaching matchup, it just could not be more different personalities. And it's been very funny to watch from afar as Lane Kiffin, like, just like twists the knife every time a decision doesn't go in Penn State's favor.
It is A plus trolling from Lane Kiffin, right? And it's also like the kind of trolling that is in good natured, good fun, right? Which I think is, it's one of those like nice little layers to this, because I mean, it's been already a very busy month of December, and it's probably only going to get crazier. But we know that with Chop Robinson, that's a wrap on his Penn State career. And then, John, right before we started recording Friday afternoon, we found out that Theo Johnson will play in the Peach Bowl, but that after that, he is off to the NFL. Not a surprise, but it is nice for Penn State that they will have their captain in the bowl game that he's committed to playing for his interim offensive coordinators.
And we'll see how much he plays, right? I think that's always a question when a guy does play. Like, you never know how much. I mean, he can play a full game. I have no idea. I'm not making any assumptions. I'm just saying we've seen before guys choose to play in the game and play enough snaps to try and have an impact or try and have like one last go with their teammates and then kind of shut it down before risking anything else. I thought at the beginning of the year that Theo leaving would be a foregone conclusion. And I still, like, I'm not like surprised by it or anything, but I think it was a little bit more of a question after maybe the numbers weren't there, but I do think he showed a lot as a blocker. I mean, mm-hmm. He has the last two seasons improved an incredible amount from that standpoint. He has shown, I think he's put on film enough of him getting open, of him being the kind of contested catch weapon that you want out of a modern NFL tight end, that I think he's going to have a long, successful NFL career. And I think, as with Manny Diaz, these guys are making the best decisions for themselves, as they should. And like, I think if that's, as long as that's the case, then he's making the right decision, right? And he'll get to enjoy bowl week with his teammates and everything. I don't harp on Chop for skipping the bowl, and I don't harp on Theo for playing in it. I think it's a decision that these guys got to make by themselves. And I've said it 40 times, but it is important to note that, because I do think people get pretty upset when guys opt out. But I think Theo has a chance to have a nice bowl game and play well and continue or start, I think, what should be a really fruitful pre-draft process, because I think he's going to crush it at the combine.
I was going to say, I think he's one of those guys who we're going to see test really, really well, right? This was kind of the Canadian rules wide receiver coming out of high school. And I went to Windsor and talked to him then. It was like, hey, here's this guy who physically has all these skills, but they have to kind of put it together. And I do wonder too, John, this raises the question for the rest of that tight end room and Tyler Warren. What does his future hold? Is he back? Is he not? To me, that's like maybe the most interesting decision, because I think some of these other ones, you look at it and it's basically a foregone conclusion that Olu won't be back, right? Foregone conclusion, it would seem, that Kalen King is not back, right? Again, these guys have not announced, but this is just me spitballing here. But when you get to Tyler Warren, you can absolutely make the case that his draft stock increased this year, that he helped himself, unusual skill set, really good athlete. I don't know what happens there. I mean, you can make the argument now that it's crystal clear that if he comes back, he is the guy, but we know Penn State likes to, well, they did like to use three tight ends. We'll see moving forward on that one. I do wonder kind of, there goes a bit of one of your biggest chess pieces, one of your kind of bigger, better mismatch guys. So that's the one that I'm kind of most intrigued by here.
I think it's him and Daquan Hardy, right? I think those are the two.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
Depending on how they, or what decision they make.
And really Riley Thompson.
Offense and defense. I can't do this. I reached out to the NCAA. Shout out to, I want to find the Twitter name, hashtag Dan Good Tweets, reached out to me and pointed out the spot in the rule book that I might've been missing. That essentially he started his college enrollment clock in Australia, which is why he would only have 1 year instead of two. Penn State would have to then apply to get that 1 year essentially being a COVID year, because he wasn't here when it happened. He wasn't in the NCAA.
See, that was my thing. It's like he was, does the COVID rule apply when you're in Australia?
That's why I
weren't on the current roster.
call it an educated guess. I think he's going to be back next year. I'm not saying he will. Don't get mad at me if he isn't, or if he doesn't have eligibility left. But I think he will be able to come back next year, based on how these things have gone.
But here's what I can tell you for sure, John, about gosh, I almost called him Alex Paquetta. No, not Alex Paquetta. He's in the portal now. Here's what I can tell you about Riley Thompson. He was the winner of the Athletics All Portal team.
Oh,
so there's
the after being on the Athletics team. After being on the Athletics All Freshman team last year.
He was a freshman. Then and here, who knows?
Listen, the Athletic just giving Riley Thompson all the love and deserved. By the way, he's been awesome. He was very good this year. But no, I think to go back to Tyler Warren, I think you're right. He'd be the undisputed guy next year, and that could help. I'll be really interested in seeing what happens there. If he does go, then it's Khalil Dinkins, then it's Andrew Rapoyer, then it's Jerry Cross, Joey Schlaffer. Sorry. In the incoming recruit, Luke Reynolds, right, is going to, we will see how much he impacts right away, but he's a big time recruit. I think he could potentially push for playing time if he's kind of physically there. But yeah, this is going to be, it's an interesting spot to watch because I also think it could dictate what the offense looks like next year, and what Andy Kotelnicki kind of shapes things around. And, you know, I've been watching. I said last week that I'm doing a story like breaking down what this offense is going to look like, and I've been watching just an unhealthy amount of all 22 of Kansas. And man, this guy is so creative. It is genuinely incredible. I think whoever is at Penn State, whoever their best weapons are, they're going to find a way to get them the ball, and they're going to find a way to put them in space and put them in a position to succeed. I didn't do a story on this when Yurcich was hired, but I did watch a lot of Oklahoma State when he initially was. And I don't think.
Did you ever see a swinging gate 2-point conversion try at Oklahoma State?
No, but I did see a modified swinging gate with Kotelnicki against Illinois. Oh, baby,
let's go.
Yeah, where he swung the line out to the left side. Okay. And this will be in the story, which should be published early next week. He swings the offensive line out to the, I think it was the weak side of the formation, out wide. And he had, it looked like two tight ends and a fullback next to the center. And
excuse me, two tight ends and a what?
Yeah. Well, it might've been a third tight end. It was number 47. I was assuming fullback based on the number.
That's going to get some of the fan base hot and bothered right there.
Never mind. Pretend I didn't say it. Three skill position players next to the center. They sent a receiver out with the lineman and then brought him in motion on what looked like a read play a fly sweep. And it was a big game, like, because they caught the defense. His whole offense is based around, and I know I'm going on a different tangent, but whatever.
This is good. Keep going.
Sort of. His whole offense is based around putting the defense in conflict. That's what all offensive coordinators are trying to do.
Yeah.
But he's not just putting them in conflict. He's confusing the hell out of them. Like, the linebacker tried to tell the safety to get over, then I think he realized he was supposed to get over, and then he starts to go over, and they realize again that maybe not, because then the receiver comes back in motion, and then the safety drops down a little bit, and the linebacker's moving out, and by then it's too late, and the receiver who was getting the ball on a fly sweep was creating a big play. So this was like, this is a masterclass. Like, a lot of what he did at Kansas, quite frankly, is a masterclass. And just putting the defensive players in hell and not letting them know what they should be doing, getting them off their keys, putting them in a bad spot, getting them to make the incorrect decision. And like, Kansas is really talented with Jalen Daniels at quarterback, not incredible at the skill positions, and he was still maximizing those guys. Frankly, if I would be stunned if this offense isn't a ton of fun to watch next year, which means when it's not, I'm sorry. Like, I didn't mean to chase everything. I didn't mean to. I'm just like, I had a lot of fun watching this film.
No, I think this is where we're kind of previewing what we're working on. I've been making a lot of phone calls here in the last week, talking to a lot of his former players, people he's coached with, that type of thing. And I'll share my findings early next week in a story on The Athletic. Yeah. Still kind of working through it now. But no, John, that is one of the major themes that you hit on. It's like, he is not only putting stress on a defense, like, he's putting these guys in hell. Like, that is literally what every player I've talked to has said. That's why they loved playing for the guy. And the thing that I'm excited about, because, you know, I like when we're working with interviewing people with personality, from what I've been told, he's pretty quirky. So I think we'll probably get along just fine, because That's fun to write about quirky. I will tell you, John, my most revealing piece of information. I've got to the bottom of his pinned tweet. When you've got two Winnie the Pooh characters pinned on Twitter, that is my music. That is why I'm here. I've gotten to the bottom of that, to the depths of the pinned tweet. And I think it should make for a good story. So I'll have that up next week on The Athletic. And then we will be trying to figure out what in the world
happens
in the defensive coordinator search.
I was going to say, it's funny. Like, I'm doing the film breakdown. You talked to a numerous number of players and coaches. Mm-hmm. I talked to a few coaches. I get to know them. We're going to have these stories up, like you said, at theathletic.com, for me at centerdaily.com. And then in like 4 days, not actually 4 days, it's going to be a week. It's going to feel like a day, though. Or maybe even 2 weeks.
Actually, no.
We're going to be doing the same.
We have availability next week.
No, I'm saying with the defensive coordinator, we're going to be doing the same things, making the same phone calls. I'll be watching as much film as I can get my hands on of the defensive coordinator whenever they're hired. Because this is how it goes in December. We are constantly doing these things. This is the first time, by the way, I don't think I mentioned this earlier, that James Franklin's had to replace the offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator since 2016. That season ended pretty well. I think Penn State fans would be satisfied with another Big Ten title if that's the case again. But
the other point that I wanted to make, and it was in my story today on The Athletic, we talk about springboard jobs, John, right? You look at the last two defensive coordinators for Penn State. They've left for head coaching jobs, right? That's good. Now, we can't say the same on the other side of the ball, but maybe it's turning a new leaf, right? Maybe this is, I don't know. It feels like there's good energy around Penn State right now in terms of the offense, the excitement. I think I'm curious when we get to hear from some players next week. Penn State will have their on-campus bowl media day before to kind of wrap up finals week and where things are at this point in the semester. So I'm curious, you know, just, and again, this is going to be a very preliminary interactions that they've had with Andy at this point, just because he's only been here for a few days. But I'm curious kind of what that's been like. Maybe we'll even get the catch. I don't know if this is true or not. I could be lying right here. Maybe we'll get to see part of a bowl prep practice here in Haluba Hall maybe one last time this year. Maybe I'm just speaking it into existence. But, John, I do know I've got my logistics booked for the Peach Bowl. Are you all booked?
Yes. Yeah, I'm booked, ready to go. Hotel room is booked and flight is booked. And that's the nice thing about these New Year's Six bowls. Mm-hmm. I don't have to book a rental car. Like, they shuttle us everywhere. It's fantastic. I appreciate the Rose Bowl for doing that last year, the Peach Bowl for doing it this year. It makes sense.
New Year's Six games, they do it right for us. But, John, I do want to tell you there's something. I won't give out the name of our hotel, but it's going to be pretty obvious once I tell you.
Yeah.
For your fear of heights, this is not the place you want to be. Like, I will be calling the hotel to see if they can put you on the top floor. I will say I've got an affinity for Atlanta because that was always the family vacation spot back in the day. We had family down there, so every summer we'd pile in the car and drive from Pennsylvania to Georgia. Thankfully, I'm not driving this time. I'll be on a plane. But I'm going to get to show you some of the good spots that I enjoyed as a kid. You'll get to see my family's brick in Centennial Olympic Park. But really, really good
stuff. College Football Hall of Fame, where you have to go every time you go to Atlanta.
Yeah, have you ever done that? I've never done that.
Yeah, I did. I think it was 4 or 5 years ago. I think it was 5 years ago. Because I covered the national. The last time I was at this stadium, which does have an ice cream machine in the press boxes, I think
really?
I mentioned 100 times. Was when I covered the Alabama-Georgia national title game when future Philadelphia Eagle, go Birds, Devontae Smith caught the game-winning touchdown from Tua Tagovailoa. The game was in 2018, so I think it was the 2017 season, if I remember. I think that's right.
Man, the Slim Reaper.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, he's so awesome. By the way, if anyone saw my eyes get big when I turned to the right, if you're watching on YouTube, it was not Penn State related. I saw someone say that Shohei Ohtani is reportedly signing with the Blue Jays. So that is why my eyes got big.
Okay, John. That is, I feel like of all of the sweepstakes possibilities, 100%. I'm fine with that. That's fine.
Yeah. And now it's hoping Yoshinobu Yamamoto goes to the Red Sox and also stays out of the National League East. But we are not a baseball podcast. I do not need to go too deep into this.
We've got enough on our plates this time of year.
Yes, we have plenty to talk about, and we will have plenty to talk about. We will be back again next week. What are we going to be talking about? Honestly, I would give you a preview. I don't know. Like, there's going to be 45 things that happen between now and when we record.
Maybe, hopefully, by the end of the week, I would hope that maybe they actually introduce the OC. We'll see. I don't know.
I hope it's not on Bull Media Day, but
just for that, it'll probably be on Bull Media Day.
I know.
And the other thing, John, too, the early signing period. We are, gosh, less than 2 weeks away from that.
2 weeks.
Got some phone calls I need to make there. Burning question for the weekend. Will we make it through the weekend without anyone declaring?
Without anyone declaring?
Mm-hmm.
So this, I was going to
say. We've got a few options left.
I thought you were going to include like guys going in the portal or guys committing to Penn State and all that.
No, just declaring.
I think yes. I think these decisions, like, we usually see them later, right? Like, I feel like with Penn State,
like, decisions are made. Like, I'm confident the decisions are made. It's just kind of when they get leaked out, or not even leaked out, when they get posted.
I think if players are playing in the Peach Bowl, we will see them sooner. If they're not, we won't see them.
Because otherwise,
and I'm realizing that's me straddling the fence.
Because the next Friday we're all going to ask.
I say we don't see any.
Yeah. I don't know. I say somebody tries to Friday news dump us just to be like, you know, just because.
Please don't. It's already 2:00.
I was going to say, I'm getting a little nervous now. Friday at 2:00. That's when I get a little worried.
I continue to scroll Twitter.
Is that all we got for this week? I think.
Yeah, I think that's everything. We will, like I said, we're going to have more mm-hmm. the rest of this month, probably end up recording 83 episodes in December alone. We will have more throughout the off season. We'll have more from the Peach Bowl. We'll have more from Atlanta. We'll see if we have anything from the stadium itself. That's always an interesting, fun time to try and set up. But we will be back, rest assured, next week. This is, I think, our second episode this week, right? Because time doesn't exist anymore.
What is time?
We will be back at least once next week, potentially more if things happen. We need to discuss things with everyone. But until then, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, hit the thumbs up button down below. Hit the subscribe button. That always helps us out. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star review. Leave us a rating on there with a review. That would be very nice, and we'd greatly appreciate it. Read Audrey at The Athletic. Find her on Twitter at oddsnyder4. Read me at centerdaily.com. That's C-E-N-T-R-E. And on Twitter at John Sauber. Thank you for tuning in. Have a great day.